Welcome back, runners, to another episode of Tread Lightly. We are super excited, as always, to chat with you. I am your co-host and running coach, Amanda Brooks of Run to the Finish.
And I'm your co-host and running coach, Laura of Laura Norris Running.
So today we have a topic that is sort of near and dear to my heart, which is what's causing your fatigue. And there are a ton of things that we're going to go through here. But one of the first things I just want to say is, as athletes and runners, we tend to be really in tune with our body, and we know when things feel different than they have felt before. And so when that happens, don't be afraid to check things out, to get your blood work, to go see a doctor. And if things keep going, don't be afraid to keep pushing. So a lot of you have heard me share part of my story before. When I was in my late 20s, I went through a phase where all of a sudden I was like, I can't even get out of bed. I'm so exhausted. And I went to multiple doctors who just said, you're stressed. And I said, no joke, my hair is falling out and I can't go for a run. I'm a marathon runner. This is very stressful. I don't know why, but I was just determined to keep looking. And oddly enough, I happened to read Jillian Michaels had put out a book at the time, and she was talking about melasma, which is something that happens from hormones. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is what's happening on my face. And so I went to an endocrinologist. Again, he said, you're a runner, you're fine, but if it'll make you feel better, I'll run this. Very placating. I said, I don't care, run it. He did, and it came back. I had zero estrogen, not a little, zero. Like, you don't even get to zero in menopause. So that was because I kept pushing. He didn't really have an answer after that, so it kind of fell back on me, but I have seen this process happen over and over and over with a lot of athletes. You go in, they say, you're a runner, you look healthy, you're probably just overtraining. And maybe you are, but maybe you're not. And so if you go through this list that we talk about today and you're like, none of that is really hitting on me and I am still really struggling, keep asking. Keep pushing, keep looking for answers. You deserve it. Feeling sick, tired, and exhausted is not normal, and we got to stop normalizing it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, sometimes people get so used to it that they normalize it and they think, this is how I always feel as a runner, and it's not. And I agree. Like, go into a doctor, especially if things don't get better, as you might work through some things on this list. And I know doctors are stressed. I know they don't have a lot of time to give to you. So if you don't find one that works for you, get a second opinion. But I have seen athletes have fatigue, and it turns out to be something like undiagnosed celiac or a thyroid disorder or all sorts of things that we can't solve for you in this episode today, but hopefully some of the things that we do provide can help some of you who might be having fatigue due to easily fixable issues in your nutrition or training.
Great point. There are so many like potential causes. So let's just start with like a quick definition. What's normal? What's not normal? Because let's be honest, like training for a marathon is a little tiring in itself.
Yes. So I think it's really important to think about like fatigue that comes from training versus abnormal fatigue. So abnormal fatigue is constant. It's during training more than once, more often than not even. Most of your runs will feel sluggish or tired or like you can barely move. And you feel that fatigue the rest of the day. Everything is hard, whether it's your run or just getting through work, taking care of your kids, making dinner. You go to bed, you sleep, and you still wake up tired. That's the type of fatigue that we're kind of addressing in this episode. On the other hand, we have like training fatigue, which can be muscle soreness or, you know, your easy runs slowing down a little bit more in marathon training because you're spent from your hard workouts. But it doesn't leave you feeling run down for days and weeks on end. Usually you'll feel better with a good night's sleep, with a rest day, with even an easy run day. I think that's the difference. Like training should not leave you falling asleep at your desk during the workday. And when I hear runners say that, it's a big red warning sign to me.
Yep. And like you said, we're going to have a bad run here and there, a run where you're just like, oh my God, I'm tired today. Cool. That totally happens and is very, very normal. But when that's happening consistently, every run, you're really like mentally talking yourself through it because you're so tired. That's when we're kind of saying, okay, you're hitting a point where something here is off and we need to address it. So one of the first places that a lot of us can start, and it's something we can address on our own, is often just looking at nutrition and vitamins in particular. So it's super easy to get blood work, whether you do that through your doctor, or I know we've talked about Inside Tracker before. It's been helpful for both of us. Super, super easy just to find out, hey, maybe this is something as simple as I'm low in vitamin D, because a vast majority of the population is often low in vitamin D. And as a result, that creates fatigue, a lowered immune system. It can create trouble sleeping. It can create mood issues. So if all those things are happening, of course, you're going to feel a little more sluggish and a little more run down.
Yes. And vitamin D is definitely one of them. Another one we see very commonly is iron. Your ferritin might be low. Your hemoglobin might be low. But especially as a runner, you want to have ferritin looked at first, because that's the storage form. And that will drop before your hemoglobin drops because of your body trying to regulate things. When ferritin is low, when hemoglobin is low, when you're in various phases of anemia, you don't have enough red blood cells to take oxygen to your working muscles. So runs feel harder. You might feel more fatigued from normal training. And we have a whole episode on this in season one, but it often is a big place to look. I think it's something like almost 50% of active females have low iron. That statistic might be off, but it's more than we would think. It's very, very common, especially if you're at the age where you're menstruating.
Another one is actually being low in B12. So this is one that I actually found out when I was low in ferritin, that I was also low in B12. So B12 can create just sort of a feeling of muscle weakness, not like, oh, I can't hold my body up, but just everything feels a little bit harder. You have a lack of energy. It affects all kinds of things. So even how your body uses folate and things like that too.
Yeah. And this is why blood work is really important, because they all kind of feel the same. Like low B12 and low iron will feel similar. You want to get them all tested in blood work, because maybe it's one, maybe it's all. Sometimes with some athletes who don't eat enough, they might have low iron, low vitamin D, and low B12, or maybe you just have low iron. So don't start blindly supplementing. Get tested first.
Yes, because there is a danger to being high in things. So it's one of the reasons I personally don't take a multivitamin, because we see just as many issues from people suddenly super high in vitamin A or something like that. I try to just supplement with the things where, for whatever reason, my nutrition, I just cannot seem to stay on top of. And vitamin D, I think, surprises a lot of people because we're outside so much. But even when I lived in Florida and even living in Colorado, like places where I'm outside all the time, there are periods where I will still be low. So I'm getting the sunshine and things like that, or I'm trying to get it from all kinds of foods. So it's one that's just very easy to be low in. Same thing with iron, especially if we don't eat a lot of red meat. So look at your total food intake, and it's not just, am I getting enough calories, but am I getting nutrients? So am I actually eating enough veggies and things where I'm going to be getting all of these different things? I think that's a great thing to sort of think about beyond just thinking about calories.
Yeah. And I really liked your point about like not blindly taking a multivitamin, because high iron will cause fatigue just like low iron causes fatigue. And a lot of multivitamin supplements have iron in it that you might need, or if your iron's low, you might need more than that. So yeah, I really agree with that. And then the one thing I'd say also is don't fall for supplements that claim to increase your energy. So we're talking about the role that all these vitamins play in energy production, but things like green supplements or pre-workouts aren't going to magically solve your fatigue problem, especially if your vitamins are low, or especially if you have stuff that we're going to talk about following, low carbohydrate or low energy availability.
Oh, I have to make a note about pre-workout because you mentioned it. I have nothing against pre-workout, but I do think you need to use it judiciously. So I don't think it's something we should use before every single workout, because then you're no longer tuning into your body's responses, you're just overriding them. So I'm fatigued, but I'm going to take this and then I'm going to do my nice hard run anyways. And then I'm extra fatigued because my body was already asking for a rest day and I just made it push even harder. So I do think pre-workout, totally fine. I don't use it very often for that specific reason. I really save it for the occasional long run or the occasional speed workout when I know I'm in a good place. So just consider that. If you've been using a lot of pre-workout, is there a chance that you're just kind of ignoring your body's signals when you use it?
Ooh, that's a really good point, because I know some people use coffee in the same way, or green tea, and caffeine enhances alertness. It does not create energy. It is not a replacement for carbs, fat, and protein.
Which, speaking of carbs, so one of the reasons you might be feeling fatigued is that you're doing a low carbohydrate diet, or even without intentionally doing a low carbohydrate diet, you are simply just not getting enough carbohydrates. I had a very angry message from someone on Instagram the other day because I was telling women to eat carbohydrates. And they said, but for me, I just get bloated. And so I never need to eat more than 150 grams. And I was like, okay, I'm not a nutritionist, so I'm not going to debate your personal situation. But we do have a lot of data showing us that, especially as runners and particularly as females, you gotta eat your carbohydrates.
Yeah. Well, and kind of to that particular situation, not saying for this individual necessarily, but bloating can be a sign of low energy availability. It can be a sign of having restricted food for so long that your body struggles to digest things like carbohydrates. It doesn't mean you don't need it. It doesn't mean carbs are bad for you. It means that something else might be going on. There's also a certain amount of bloating that is a normal result of digestion, or it's just your body telling you, hey, slow down while you're eating. Stop shoveling your food, chew it properly, take your time at your meal. So I think that shows how we have all these myths and conceptions around carbohydrates and don't always understand that carbohydrates are the primary fuel source substrate for energy production as an athlete, especially a runner.
Yes. So we often hear people talk about becoming fat adapted. And the idea behind that is then, well, if I'm fat adapted, I don't need to eat as many carbohydrates. And I admit that was something I fell into a little when I started looking at the Mahaffey Tone method, because he preaches that, in no way looking at what it does to women. But what's really happening, just to kind of understand that, is that, yes, on your longer endurance type of stuff, it's keeping your body in the place where it's using slightly more fat than carbohydrates for energy. But in order to use that fat, you have to actually be taking in carbohydrates, which confuses people. But fat burns in a carbohydrate flame is like one of the easiest ways to think of it. So being fat adapted doesn't mean you don't need carbohydrates. You still need both. Your body is always using both. And yeah, I feel like that one is so confusing, but it's you still need both. And you're not in a quote fat loss mode when you are using fat for fuel, which I think is the other confusing thing. So being in the fat burning zone is not the same as fat loss. They are very different.
They are very different. Like, there's a reason that higher intensity is used in weight loss programs, even if it burns more carbohydrates. And to all that, for those of you who are thinking, well, I don't care about weight, I care about performance, a large body of research shows that high fat, low carbohydrate diets actually result in a decrease in exercise economy, even in low intensity sports such as race walking, which is lower intensity than you're doing your marathon or your ultra. At Dr. Louisa Burke has a ton of research on it. And while there may be a few statistical outliers, the overwhelming data points to the fact that if you spend too long on a low carbohydrate diet, in addition to any endocrine disruptions, you're just going to be a less efficient athlete. So your performance is actually going to decline with time.
One of the things that has been interesting for me in the last few years, and I think we probably talked about this on the diet episode, but was seeing some of the folks who were high performing and really, really promoting the high fat, low carb diet. And now here they are years later saying, I wish I had never done that because it tanked all of my hormones. So there may be this short term where it's fine. And that's kind of the issue I think we get into with what we're going to talk about next, low energy availability. So maybe there's this short term where you had a weight loss goal. And so you were not eating as much as you were burning. And that was okay for a short term. But when it becomes long term, all of a sudden we're tanking your energy. We're tanking your performance. We're creating other hormonal major issues.
Yes. Yeah. And those hormonal issues affect both men and women. We often talk about in the context of female athletes because we're both female athletes. I know majority of you listening are, but there is research showing that low energy availability, low carbohydrate availability is going to affect testosterone. It just plays out on longer time horizons. So female athletes will get the warning signs of their periods going away, experiencing some amenorrhea or oligomenorrhea where their periods are irregular. Male athletes don't have that warning sign, or at least it might not be as obvious. So they can stick to these diets longer until things really come crashing down on them.
That's another interesting point too. A lot of these diets that come out when they first have this big buzz and say, hey, we did this study, most of the time the study is on men. So the people who are doing it were men, and often maybe not even male athletes, but sedentary men. And so the way it's going to impact women is so different. Sorry, ladies, it's just different. Your hormones play a different game.
Yes. And before we move on to low energy availability, I know a lot of you like numbers and solid ideas versus just us saying eat more carbs. And a lot of times I find when you give athletes these numbers, they're like, excuse me, how much? But for, you know, you're kind of regular running a few times per week, we probably want to see about 3 to 5 grams of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight per day. So that's for any of you who are, you know, training pretty recreationally, maybe doing 30 to 60 minutes a few times per week. Once we get into moderate volume, which is training 1 to 2 hours per day on average, that's up to 5 to 7 grams of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight. High volume, so like people who are elites or sub-elites and they're doing 2+ hours a day, that can be up to 8 to 10 grams of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight. And a kilogram is 2.2 pounds. I know it's always confusing, but us in the US, we're the only people not using metric, and a lot of sports science takes place out of the US. I know there's some good resources that can help convert this to imperial, but that's a lot. And in grad school, when I had to do nutrition assessments for athletes, every single athlete of mine that I did this on, I had to tell, you need to eat more carbohydrates.
Yeah, I was doing some quick math here just to give people an example. So if you were, say, 150 pounds and you were going for 5 grams per kilogram, that comes out to about 340 grams of carbohydrates per day. So yeah, I could tell you that the majority of runners I know are probably not hitting that. So yeah, something to just kind of look at in your own training. If you know that, like, gosh, I feel like I should be feeling a little better. Or honestly, Stacey Sims had, a post that I shared today, and it was just sort of a reminder that a lot of women don't realize how much better they could be feeling because you've gotten so used to this kind of like, I don't feel great, but I don't feel awful sort of phase. And so just be willing to experiment. What would happen if you increased your carbohydrates? And you don't have to make a massive jump all at once, but just slowly starting to consistently add in more and pay attention to what your energy levels are feeling like, especially if performance is your goal. Nutrition, nutrition, nutrition.
Oh, absolutely. Like, so many athletes are like, super shoes, and those are great, but even super shoes aren't going to help you out of low energy availability, which then brings us to that. So we talked about like low carbohydrates. Often low energy availability will have low carbohydrates and it's low total calories. So you're not eating enough, or sometimes it can even happen to athletes if you have wide windows of low energy availability. So for those of you who aren't eating before you go out to your morning run and you eat dinner at 6 p.m. and then you don't eat anything again until breakfast at 9 a.m. the next morning and you train in that window, that's a window of low energy availability. And even these windows of energy deficits or total days of energy deficits can cause fatigue. They're associated with all these disruptions to how your body recovers your muscles, to your metabolic rate, to your thyroid hormones, all this stuff that's going to cascade into leaving you feeling like a hot pile of garbage on your runs.
And low energy availability isn't always intentional. I think sometimes it comes across, we hear that term and it sounds like, obviously trying to cut calories. But as someone like myself who goes through phases where I'm not hungry, and I think that comes again with hormones and how they're shifting, it can be very easy because you're really busy. Or when you are trying to eat really healthy, so you're eating a ton of veggies and they are really filling, but they don't have a lot of calories to them unless maybe you're roasting them in oils or using oils. And so you're not intentionally under eating, but you are. And sometimes we feel more like, well, it's okay because I wasn't hungry. And your body doesn't care. You may not have felt hungry, but it still needs the appropriate amount of energy for what you want it to do.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good point. And I feel like that's the trap of like marathon training is the harder you train and the more you train, the more it actually regulates your appetite hormones in a way that makes you not hungry. So your energy needs are going super high and your appetite is really suppressed. And so you can't rely on hunger during marathon training. I mean, if you're hungry, you should eat, but you can't only rely on hunger signals when you're training hard.
And I think this is maybe a good time to also just talk a little bit about disordered eating versus an eating disorder, because there is a lot of disordered eating, honestly, in running and in health and in fitness, because everyone's trying to find that perfect diet, the perfect macros, the quote, clean eating. And so it's not an eating disorder, but it's having some behaviors around food that are causing you to either restrict or skip food or just feeling bad about food. And I do think it's something we need to talk about a little bit more, because it's not the same, again, as an eating disorder, but it is very impactful and something to make sure that like you're paying attention to and finding ways to work on.
Yeah, absolutely. So an eating disorder is a mental health disorder. It meets DSM-5 criteria. It can involve binge eating, anorexia, or not eating, or bulimia, which is throwing up your food or purging your food. And it often comes with like accompanying depression, anxiety, OCD. If you suffer from anything where you feel like food is controlling your life and you cannot function, you should seek out psychiatric help or work with the RD to get a diagnosis. We don't want to downplay eating disorders because they have a really high mortality rate. But at the same time, we don't want to downplay disordered eating because it can be a slippery slope into an eating disorder, or it can still impact your quality of life. And even things like always following a restrictive diet, being afraid of certain foods, having guilt or shame when you eat certain foods, body image issues, skipping meals, you know, getting anxious about going out with friends, those can fall under the category of disordered eating, even if it's not as severe as it would be in an eating disorder.
And I think part of the reason I like to bring that up is maybe a reminder to just kind of check the conversations that you find yourself having with friends or with runners. I certainly know there was a time in my 20s where a lot of us would have a lot of conversations about, what our body looks like. And so what should we eat and this and that? And we were kind of just feeding each other with some really not so great things. And so can you be the person in your group now who is sort of promoting, like, I can't wait to see us fuel for performance? And you'd be amazed who we hang around impacts a ton. And so just you kind of showing that different way of looking at food could really help someone else when they're going through that little bit of disordered thinking.
Yes. Yes. The next thing that can cause fatigue that I feel like so many runners fall into this trap is dehydration. I mean, I see this often, but I feel like it happens more in winter when people aren't as thirsty, or in summer when we're losing so much. But if you're dehydrated during exercise, or even more so if you're dehydrated at the start and you're just not drinking enough throughout the day, you are going to feel fatigued.
Yes, that reminded me to take a drink right at that moment. This is a place where we've talked about electrolytes more, but sometimes they could be a good thing to just sip on all day because they encourage that thirst mechanism a little bit. So maybe a little thing to try if you're like, oh, I just hate drinking water. Another one that we mentioned at the very beginning, perimenopause. So we kind of forget about this, but if you are a woman, honestly, it could be your upper 30s, but generally in your 40s into 50s, and you're going through perimenopause or menopause, there might be some days where your fatigue level is just a little bit off the chart. And so just being willing to adapt your training a little bit then, that's something I've worked with a lot of our athletes on the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. It's something that now we're actually talking more about, we're hearing more about, which is great. But just know, like, you're not crazy if you feel fine one day and the next day it just feels like you kind of swung low. When your hormones are kind of just all over the place, that can very much happen. So just giving yourself that grace and then paying attention to all these other things and sort of, is this a constant or, oh, this is just kind of like random, even though I am doing these other things right. It could just be your hormones. And there's not great solutions to that other than working with your doctor, and maybe it is an estrogen replacement or something like that is possible. This is again where I will say, if you go to the doctor and they say something like, we just don't test hormones for women who are in perimenopause, I would say test them anyways, because without a baseline, you have no means of ever supplementing. And the first thing they do for any woman who wants to get pregnant is take her hormones. So guess what? You're still a woman. You're just in a different phase of life. Like, the data is just data, and at least you have it to do something with.
With perimenopause, like you said, training load management comes in really important, where I've seen a lot of women, worked with women who we just have to shift things around to manage their training load better, to have more recovery built in. But that's also something that applies to all runners. A poorly managed training load, not enough recovery built in, is going to leave you feeling fatigued, even if your sleep is great, even if you're eating, you know, enough carbohydrates and total calories. Sometimes there is such thing as just too much training.
Yep. I think that sort of training, recovery, load management, like you said, is just really important across everyone. One of the things that I know we always talk about is getting enough sleep, and we fully understand there are phases of life where that is like easier to say than to actually do. But if there's anything you can do to improve the quality or duration of your sleep, it impacts everything. Again, we've pulled out studies numerous other times before to kind of show the improvements in performance, but obviously it's going to have you reaching for more of that caffeine and things like that when you're already starting from a place of being sleep deprived.
Yeah. And if I work with an athlete who is upfront that they're like, my sleep is not great because I have 3 kids, or I'm working through insomnia, or my spouse snores or something, we change training load management while they work through that. But for anyone in general, like thinking about, you know, in addition to your sleep and stuff, are you getting 1 to 2 rest days per week? And that's true rest. Like spin class, Peloton is not a rest day. Are you going truly slow on your easy runs? Can you slow them down more? I have some athletes who they were going easy, but we slowed down their easy runs more and they felt better. And they are people who, you know, have sleep issues or have high stress jobs. Are you running your hard workouts too fast, or are your hard workouts too aggressive for your fitness or training load? Like if you're running only 20 miles per week, you do not need to go do a 6 mile tempo run or something. Or even, are you doing too many hard workouts per week? I feel like this was like a thing back when we started running where it was like an interval run and a tempo run and a hill repeat workout every week plus your long run. And it was just so much.
Yeah, I've been seeing this creeping back in lately with sort of a push towards run less, run faster style things. And I think for a lot of folks, they are surprised to find out that running 3 days super hard is actually leaving them more fatigued than when they had 5 days of running where like three were real easy and then two had a variety of speed rather than like super hard, super hard, super hard. So yeah, take a look at your actual training plan and just take a second to figure out if it's working for you.
Yes. And I think that's the really important thing. Is it working for you, not for the person who's selling it?
The one final thing I will say is it's maybe also a good time to just decide if your goal is actually the goal you're still excited about. I think sometimes what can look like fatigue is also just that we don't care about this thing we've been working towards anymore. Like all of a sudden you're like, this BQ is like not that exciting for me. I really just want to go hit the trails and be out in nature, but you're forcing yourself to stick to a plan because you said that was your goal. So, you know, if you're like, no, I sleep well, I'm eating great, I'm eating plenty, like I'm not dealing with hormonal issues. Well, all right. Like, do you still really want to do this? Or do you even just need a break from running altogether? That is also okay. 100% okay to have a season where you go ride your bike or you go ski, you will usually come back more invigorated and excited.
That is such good advice to wrap up this episode on.
All right, friends, as always, we super appreciate that you have listened, and please, please, please keep the reviews coming. They are so useful, and also just let us know what you're enjoying and what you want to hear more of.
Yes. And if you have any questions, you can find us at Tread Lightly Running on Instagram. Please reach out there. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you for listening.